Well, good evening and welcome to the fourth presentation in this our eighth series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries and the Kentucky Museum. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services, I coordinate this series with my colleague back in the white, Peggy Wright, with assistance from our webmaster, Hai Wong Wan, who will be here shooting photographs and taking the podcast. Daniel Peach designed our posters. Our technical specialist tonight is Jason Hatman. After a trip to Europe in the early 1990s, Kenny Mattingly, whose family owned a dairy farm in Barron County, Kentucky, came back impressed about the way small family farms in Western Europe were finding innovative ways to add value to their products and to market to local communities. Armed with this new vision in 1998, Kenny and Beverly Mattingly and their family began using some of their milk to produce Gouda cheese using old-world handmade techniques. Today, their dairy farm in Austin, Kentucky, produces more than 70,000 pounds of cheese. I've written in 26, so they tell me soon to be 30, varieties including cheddar, Colby, Jack, Asiago, Swiss, Havarti, and even a Barron County Blue. When Kentucky's farmhouse cheese was served to guests at this year's Masters in Augusta, it was yet another accolade for this Barron County cheese producer, whose cheeses have been served at the Kentucky Derby, to Queen Elizabeth II, at the Rolex three-day event, and most recently at the World Equestrian Games. Now served in some of the state's finest restaurants and locally available in many specialty stores, the cheese is even sold at Bowling Green's weekly farmers market. So. The Mattingly son, Jared, is a WKU student. This Kentucky company has been the subject of numerous TV programs and articles on progressive agriculture and has been featured in Kentucky Living magazine and even on John Varence's Big World of Food. The farm has even become a Kentucky tourist destination. So here to tell their story, please welcome Kenny and Beverly Mattingly.
Used to this high-tech stuff. Well, this is a real honor for us to be here, and I thank everyone who had a part in inviting us. This is a little different format for us to be able to tell our story. We usually do it in our either in the milk house or in the cheese shop, so I'm going to have to imagine I'm in my cheese shop telling this story. But a couple of weeks ago, or a few weeks ago, I was asked to speak to a group here in Bowling Green, and we pulled out this quite old now. My son Jared just stepped in. He's the one with the hat back here, and his girlfriend Ashton. but this film was produced by Western Kentucky University probably about 6 years ago, and it was interesting pulling it out for our benefit to see how we've come along and how we've grown and the different cheeses we're making. And so I'm going to start out showing this video, and then we'll continue our story after watching this. I think it's about 6-7 minutes.
Wisconsin is traditionally cheese-making country, but Kenny Mattingly and his family in Barron County are breaking new agricultural ground by making the cheese right on his farm. Let's take a look.
First of all, in cheese making, the quality of the cheese starts with the contentment of your cows. My mom says we have contented cows and caressed curds, and that's her motto. But that's real true, because the healthier and the more comfortable your cows are, number one, the more they produce, the longer they last, and the better quality your milk is, as far as keeping your somatic cell count low, your bacteria low, and all that has a direct correlation to quality of your cheese, because we don't pasteurize our milk. Our cheese is a raw milk cheese, which has to be aged a minimum of 2 months. In the cheese making process, we're in the cheese shop. On the mornings we make cheese. We're making about twice a week right now. And on the mornings we make cheese, the milks come into the vat straight out of the cows. There's one person milking, one person in the cheese shop, keeping up with what's going on in there. And so once we get our milk in, the warm milk coming out of the cows is ready for the culture to be added. We add the culture, give it, some cheeses take an hour, the Gouda takes like maybe 30 minutes for the culture to work. And then after the culture works, we add the rennet, which is the coagulant and causes your curds and whey to separate. And then we cook the cheese by raising the temperature from about 88 to 100. And then we drain the whey, and then we mold the cheese and press it. And then after pressing, we either vacuum pack it or wax it. The Gouda needs to be waxed. So the Gouda is handled several times before it hits the shelf, the store shelf. Well, starting out, it was totally family or it wouldn't have happened. My parents, I give them all the credit for where we're at right now. Dad kind of got out of the milking, and him and Mom, Mom and him started making the cheese. They marketed it. They took it to farmers markets, done the office work, just done everything. I was just kind of in the milk house barking out orders. But the cheese making is really a physically draining job. And so, you know, they're both in their 60s, and so they kind of got out of that and have been doing some marketing, trying to train us, I guess, me and the help I've hired. But they've really enjoyed it, just taking a product off the farm that Dad's worked so hard to preserve, taking this product out to the public. He's really enjoyed that. I heard comments like, wow, this is what cheese should taste like. And you know, they kind of put in their mouth with this suspicion whether they're going to like it or not. And then their face lights up, and then the kind of flavor stays in there for a while. They just keep humming and, going on about the flavor of it. And I think that's contributed to the fact that it's a fresh, you know, fresh off the farm, and it's a raw milk cheese. And, you know, I tell people that some of our foods are so overly processed that there's really not any flavor in them. And so we have all the flavors that's naturally supposed to be there in our cheese. You go back to the question why I do this. I think every day is new, you know, with the new life and the seasons and the challenges of it. It just kind of keeps you hanging on, you know. And plus, you know, I feel like it's a real blessing and an honor in this day and age to make a living on a piece of land, you know, to be connected with the land that way. And also, too, to have the opportunity to share it with other people, you know. I think it's that. It's a challenge more than anything. And just feeling like I've got a unique opportunity that I need to appreciate. Well, when I look at the farm, I look at work. No, beyond just the work, I look at making it sustainable. You know, a friend of mine reminded me the other day, it's not so much what I accomplish in my lifetime, but what I'm handing to the next generation. My dad done a tremendous amount of work improving on this farm so that I could benefit from that. And then I take it from him. I kind of take the baton from him. You know, the Indians had that philosophy too. It making this land sustainable for the next generation, not just robbing it, you know. And corporate agriculture don't think that way, but family farming does. You know, I want this farm to be in better shape for Jared than when I received it.
Make several kinds of cheeses and enjoy showing their customers how it's done. From the cow to the cracker, their cheese is fresh and tasty.
That's not the end of the story. It's just interesting. We watched that again, after not looking at it for a while, that we were making, I think, two or three batches a week then, three types of cheese. Today we're making, during this time of year, we make about 30 different types of cheese, some holiday things, and we're making about eight batches a week, which is about 2,000 pounds of cheese. So we've been growing and learning as we go. Our story, I guess, starts back to my parents bringing us to Kentucky when I was 19. I usually tell tourists that come to our farm, my dad moved us to the farm to keep me and my brother from going to prison. Looked like we were heading there, but there were seven children in the family. I was the second. I'm the second oldest. And so in 1976, my dad sold 5 acres in the suburbs of Indianapolis. And he made a down payment on this farm in Barron County, 200-acre farm, milking about 40 cows, tobacco farm. At that time, most dairy farms in Kentucky or in our region milk cows to subsidize a tobacco check. And my dad wanted to make a living dairy farming. And it's interesting, my brother is a naval officer. He went to England with the Navy and kind of traced our family back a little bit, went to the village the Mattingly's were from, and in that community where the Mattingly's came from, was the economy is built around dairy farming and cheese making. So I guess it's in our blood. I think my son's got the bug now to make a living dairy farming. And so that was my dad's passion. It's what led us to Kentucky, mainly because the land here was a little more affordable than Indiana where we were from. And I was 19, and within a few days, it seemed like I started to discover a passion for dairy farming. It was in September, and it was right in the middle of tobacco harvesting season. Get up at 4 in the morning, milk the cows, eat a quick bite of breakfast, go to the tobacco field, eat too much lunch for sure. That's when all the women were cooking big meals for the workers, and then go back to the tobacco patch, milk again, get in bed, roll over and get back up and start again. But I just love dairy farming. In the late 80s, the farm really couldn't support my family and mom and dad and the kids they had left at home. So I took a job with Community Farm Alliance, which is a grassroots farm organization, as an organizer. And I helped organize chapters in different counties around the state. And during that 3.5 years with Community Farm Alliance, I got a chance to meet farmers not only around the state and just come face-to-face some of the issues facing family farms, but also I got a chance to travel around the United States and meet farmers from different parts of the country. And then in 1990, I was part of a group of farmers and ranchers that went to Europe. And we were invited by European farmers to come over there and dialogue with them about the issues of free trade and what free trade meant to them and their food systems and their culture. And we started in Holland, and the first place we visited was a small dairy farm, milked about 30 cows, husband and wife team, and they made Gouda cheese and made buttermilk. And I remember being fascinated by what they were doing on their farm with their own milk. And then you'd see the villagers or their neighbors come in and buy that cheese and buttermilk right from the farm. And just that whole model of locally produced, locally purchased and eaten food. And then we went into Germany, saw some similar type operations. Then from there we went into East Germany, and this was 1 year after communism fell. And I remember standing on a big East German farm, a collective farm that, of course, by this time is all collapsing. The farm manager was asking us for advice on what to do to make it survive. But I remember standing there and seeing farmers living in high-rise apartment buildings built by the communist government, and knowing that their family's farm had been taken away in years past. And I just kind of grieved a little bit over what I saw there, but also over the fact that United States agriculture was heading in the same direction in a lot of respects. Family farms were being lost, becoming more industrialized, bought by corporations, run by corporations. And so when I came back from that trip, I narrowed it down to, I had two choices to make our farm survive, and that was try to get bigger and survive by getting bigger, or to survive by adding value to what we were already producing. And so I started searching around who might be doing such a thing. Found a lady in northern Kentucky who had been making cheese. The week I went to visit her, she had put an ad in the paper, sell her equipment. And so started talking to her about that, started researching a little harder because I wasn't there to buy the equipment that day. Just started thinking about it. So about a year and a half later, she offered me the equipment for a real good price. I was convinced that I think there'd be a market if we could make some decent cheese. The cheese market at that time, I think, was growing 11-12%. Farmstead cheese or handmade cheese was growing about 17-18%. And so that was my feasibility study. I wrapped it up with that. So we bought the equipment, parked in our barn for 4 years. At that time, my dad had sold the dairy herd. And so I bought half his heifers that he kept and started buying some other heifers. And so we started milking in the summer of 93. The same month, we also started tearing down a 150-year-old log barn to build a house out of it. So we had a lot going on that year. So I bought the equipment. And finally, when I got the equipment paid off about 3 years later, then we started building our cheese shop. And we built it by cutting trees down on our farm and having the Amish saw them up for us. So we got into it without a lot of debt, mainly because the banker thought we were nuts trying to make cheese on our farm in Kentucky, and they weren't up for a small business loan on our project. So we had to kind of do it with our own funds, you know, and our own means. And we started making cheese in 1994. My parents, my mom was my first chief cheese maker, and I was milking the cows at that time and kind of back and forth, learning myself along with her. She did a great job, very meticulous, patient cook. Said she prayed over every batch, you know, God help, you know, this turns out. And initially did our marketing in Louisville, farmers markets and restaurants and things. We made Gouda cheese that year. It was the only cheese we made. Made about 4,000 pounds. And that was about two cows' annual production converted to cheese. Each cow will make about a ton of cheese at our level of production. And we have a real high producing herd. They're averaging about over 20,000 a year per cow. And so we've grown since then. We've added new cheeses. I remember about 3.5 years into this, got real discouraged with the whole thing. I was ready to just shut it down. And I remember one morning I didn't even want to get out of bed, and dairy farmers don't think that way, you know. You just get out of bed and put your boots on and go. And it was just overwhelming me, all the new decisions that I was faced to make that I hadn't had to make as a dairy farmer, and plus all the other things that go along with producing it, you know, a finished product and marketing and personnel things. But my mom invited me to go to the Bardstown Road Farmers Market, and I said, I want you to go up there and hear what our customers have, how they appreciate what you're doing. And so I did, and I came back, and I was kind of supercharged and encouraged. We started making 3 or 4 new cheeses between the third and fourth year, and got a little braver, got a lot more confidence in our cheese making. And today we have my wife Beverly and Jared, and my daughter Jessica does the shipping and packaging along with a couple neighbor ladies. Jared manages the dairy farm with two men that help do the daily chores. We have another couple helping make cheese in the office, a bookkeeper. So we have about 12 of us involved in the daily operations at our farm now, looking at producing between 90 and 100,000 pounds of cheese this year. The market's growing again after kind of a stale last year. But I think what's pushing our market is just the interest in local food. Everybody's eating more cheese, I think, and enjoys cheese. It's not a hard product to sell. So that's driving it. And then, you know, the Department of Agriculture has done a lot of things to promote Kentucky products. As far as the actual cheese making, the video covered some of that, but just walk you through what happens each day on our farm the activities of the farm and the cheese making. We start milking about 3:30 in the morning. You do, don't you? Okay. Because I'm not there. And By about 6 o'clock, the vat's full of milk. We have a 300-gallon vat that you saw there. The same vat that we started with is what we're making 100,000 pounds of cheese in today. And so by about 6 o'clock, we have the vat full of warm milk. It's coming straight from the cows you saw. So I think that gives us an advantage to make quality cheese because the milk's so fresh and it's not being cooled or transported or heated. And so we check temperature and we check for antibiotics. That's a state law. We check each batch for antibiotics, whether we're using them or not at that time. And then we start putting the bacteria in, or the starter culture, which is, begins the fermentation of the milk. The bacteria converts the lactose sugar in the milk to lactic acid. Different bacteria create different acid levels, and that's what gives your variants of flavor. Even though some cheeses use the same bacteria, like Colby, Cheddar, and Jack would use the same mesophilic culture, but you cook them different. You cook them to different temperatures. The Colby and Jack, you add back some warm water to give it a creamier texture. By adding back the water, you pull some sugar out of the curd, which in the end doesn't age as sharp because the sugar is not there in the curd to be converted to acid. And then the aging time. The harder, drier cheese, the longer you let it age to develop flavor. We started making a brie a few years ago, which my daughter's threatening me to quit making because it's a lot of trouble to make sure the right mold grows on it and the blue mold don't show up when it's not supposed to, that type of thing. But after we've let it ferment in the milk, in the warm milk for about an hour, we add rennet. We use the vegetable rennet. Most cheese makers use a rennet that's derived from calf stomachs, and we've chosen to use a vegetable rennet just to meet another niche in the marketplace. We sell to 7 Whole Food stores, and the thing that sells our cheese among their 400 or 500 cheeses they have is if people know it's local, it's raw milk, and we use vegetable rennet. Those are 3 of the driving factors in selling our cheese. So we add the rennet. About 30 minutes after you add the rennet, the milk in the tank goes from liquid to like a pudding texture. And at that point, you cut it with curd knives into like a cottage cheese texture. And that allows the whey to escape from the solids. And then we begin the cooking of the cheese. And different cheeses are cooked differently. Some are cooked by adding hot water to the curd. Some are cooked by just circulating hot water around the jacket of the cheese vat to cook the curds up to a higher temperature. And then we drain the whey off. The whey is used as it's a byproduct of the cheese. It's the water of the cheese. There's 5 proteins in milk, and 4 of them go out in the whey, and the casein is retained in the cheese. So we feed the whey to 4 pigs, and about 50 calves, I think, are getting whey right now. And we save feed costs that way, and plus the animals, the heifers, are coming onto the milk line a month or two earlier because they're growing faster by getting that high-protein drink. And then the remainder of the whey is mixed with the manure in our manure lagoon is used for fertilizer. So it's all, the byproduct's useful and has a value. And then we after the whey's drained, we fill molds, different sizes, different shapes, depends on the cheese, and then we press it overnight. And then the wheels go in the brine tank, which is a salt bath, stays in there for 3 or 4 days, is dried for another 3 or 4 days, and then waxed. Blue cheese is inoculated with blue mold early on, and then we pierce it about a week later with needles to get the blue to grow inside of the cheese. And we age it in some containers that keep the humidity up around the cheese. So we're at a point now where we're thinking a lot about building a new facility to age these different cheeses in a specific environment. And we're kind of generically doing that right now. We've got cheese everywhere. But at the farm, we age about 7,000 pounds of cheese, 7,000 to 8,000, which is what we're making every month. And then we rent a building down the road that my daughter oversees what's going on over there. And we keep about 24,000 pounds in that facility. And we're moving out about an average of 7,000 pounds a month right now. So it's grown beyond what I imagined it. It's couple of my hopes with this project with is that it would sustain our farm, which it's doing that. You know, I don't think Jared would be as interested in being a dairy farmer if he didn't know what the cheese business was doing to help us make a living and be financially rewarded for all your hard work. You know, 2 years ago, or in 08, 09, we got the same price for our milk we did 30 years ago. And that was the year Dean Foods made record profits. And they did it because farmers were borrowing money to feed their cows. And so we want to, as much as we can, move away from those guys. part of our milk's being sold to a family over in Russellville. They make bottled milk and yogurt. And so another local product, and they pay us a premium for our milk. We try to work with them on providing them with some our excess milk. We're using about half our milk right now of 120, 130 cow herd. And our marketing, majority of it goes to farmers markets, or the highest percentage. About 20% will be sold at farmers markets here in Bowling Green, Nashville, Louisville, Lexington, E-Town. And then our probably about 60% of it will go to restaurants or specialty food stores and wine shops. And every once in a while we get those exciting places it goes, even though I don't ride horses or golf. It's nice to send cheese those places. We were, last night we got to go do a little party at Brereton Jones's house. There's been a book come out about families or individuals that have done things to help preserve Kentucky culture. We're one of the stories in that book. Real honored about that, but so they served our cheese there, and we got to act like somebody last night, didn't we? But that was fun. Our future, I don't know. We want to continue to provide for the market, but we don't want to lose how we do cheese. You know, we don't want to lose the handmade artisan aspect of our cheese. We really don't want a bigger herd, do we? We don't want to milk any more cows. Our farm, you know, we have a 200-acre farm and rent about 100 acres. That will sustain the amount of cows we're feeding and milking right now. We still got some of our own milk we could convert to cheese. One of the ideas we're kind of toying with is kind of maybe helping other farmers learn what we've learned, help them get set up in the cheese-making business, and then they would make for us. They would make some of our varieties, and we would do some marketing and distribution. That's an idea that I would like to see developed where it helped preserve some other family farms in Kentucky. But right now we're just getting ready for Christmas. We have an open house next weekend, which you're all invited to. Saturday and Sunday we'll have our gift baskets and all of our cheeses out. You can see where it's made and where the cows are milked. And if you come early enough, you can help milk. We did get an email. Somebody wants to come during milking time, so you can come at 3:30 in the afternoon. That's a little more doable. But we're thankful for what the cheese business has done for us and what we've learned from it, and that so many people appreciate what we're doing and continue to buy our cheese. So I'd like to answer some questions.
Why don't we start over here? Way back, right?
Okay. Your open house is November 13th, 14th?
The 20th and 21st.
21st.
Yes.
How do they get to Austin, Kentucky?
How do we get here? Best way is 231 Scottsville Road to 31 at, you know, in Allen County. Turn left. You go across Barron River Lake, and you'll see the entrance to the Barron River State Park on your left. Turn directly across from that to your right. And you'll go down about 7 miles on Highway 87, and you'll see a sign on the corner at Highway 921. And you'll turn left there, and we're down a couple miles.
You got the sign.
So, yeah, the sign. 231, 31, 87, 921.
Put in your GPS tracking device. Yeah.
I was just wondering how you went about, once you decided to diversify your cheese, how you went about marketing that, and did a lot of your growth come from word of mouth, or did it come from marketing efforts on your part, or now
Well, we really haven't tried to go that route, you know, with international. One thing I feel really good about is that most of our cheese is bought between Louisville and Nashville. You know, and that's, you know, the people that buy our cheese can come and see our farm in an hour, 2 hour drive, and I like that. You know, a lot of small cheesemakers or farmstead cheesemakers make a few varieties and then they market it from New York, Chicago, San Francisco. But because we offer so many types, I think we can satisfy a lot of palates close to our farm. So I like that aspect of our business. Most of our growth, I think, has been from word of mouth. We have done some demos, but I contribute a lot of that marketing growth coming out of farmers markets. Because at farmers markets, you build relationships with people. They go tell the chef at the restaurant, or they tell, you know, just, you know, every week we're, oh, we had your cheese at our party the other night, and we were telling the story, you know. And so we have satisfied customers that are marketers for us. And then as far as the new cheeses, farmers markets, again, are a good place to test market your new products. You know, I tell my sister, does the Barstown Road Farmers Market, take this and see what they think. You know, we don't have a name for it yet, but just see what they think. And so the other day she said, everybody's wanting that no-name cheese. And I can't remember how I made it. But, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay,
Amy?
Well, I'm new to the area, so where can we buy your cheese once the farmers market's closed down?
Okay. Three Chuck's Liquor Stores locations, Three Springs, Heartland, and Veterans Memorial, Greenwood Spirits, the Nutrition Center, Cheney's Dairy Barn, and a lot of the Houchins IGAs are carrying some of the varieties. Houchins IGA stores, they're like, yeah, they're small grocery stores, kind of quick, convenient type stores. I'd say Greenwood Spirits and Chuck's has the biggest variety, and Cheney's has a pretty good variety of Cheney's Dairy Barn.
My family loves all your cheeses, but what makes us keep buying them at farmers market every week even when we don't eat them is the really genial man that sells them.
You're talking about here on Scottsville Road?
Is it Sky Farmers?
Bill. Oh, it's Sky.
Yeah. Is it Sky or the other? Well, of course I go to both. So.
Yeah, Bill down here at, he's a lot more charismatic. Yeah, and he's got a little slogan that goes with all the cheeses and things. And I've gotten a lot of feedback about his performances there. Steve is just kind of different end of the scale. He's more laid back and quieter, but they sell about the same amount of cheese. Yeah, they do.
Over here. I have a question about cows. I drive to Lexington frequently on my 65. And there's a sign, I believe, just before Eton on a fence. It says, used cows for sale. Can you tell me what a used cow is as opposed to a new cow?
I think they're all used. If they've had a calf and given milk, they've got a track record. You know, they're not right off the showroom floor. I think that's an attention getter rather than a truth, you know, marketing there. But I don't know. We've had that discussion ourselves. Ethan.
Okay. Can you talk about are you getting into the mail order business? Do you view that as a big growth area or not a big growth area? Labor intensive.
As far as like internet sales.
Yeah, just mailing things out, products for Christmas.
Yeah.
Do you do some of that?
Well, the internet, you know, during Christmas is important tool in a way, you know, we probably do 200 or 300 internet orders in 2 weeks, I guess, during Christmas, 2 or 3 weeks. But the rest of the year, we might have 5 or 6. We just haven't done bought a lot of advertising on the internet. We feel that our cheese is sold when people taste it, you know. So we spend, I guess, more time doing demos and that type of thing.
Anything special about shipping cheese as opposed to other products?
Well, we ship most of our cheese UPS. We ship it in styrofoam lined boxes with some ice packs. And, you know, we have some regular markets in Atlanta, 2 day shipment, and most of the time it does well. During the summer, there's about a month or so there, some of the buyers just said, wait until it cools down a little bit. The thing about cheese is, it's a fermented product, and that's what preserves it, is the fermentation. It's not preserved by refrigeration. So, you get requests from some of the stores we sell to. I know one Whole Foods said, you've got to send that cheese here at 42 degrees or whatever. I said, we don't even age it that cold. I guess I have to freeze it overnight or something. But, and then you get there, and they've got cheese sitting around the room like this, So, I tell people that are traveling, don't worry about refrigeration. It's not going to go bad. It might just get soft. It might age faster, but we've already ruined it for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Back here. Hey.
How do your various recipes originate? Like the new cheeses that come on the market and we hear all these wonderful things about different varieties, but how do they come about?
Usually an accident. We have I think six signature cheeses now that are our recipe, and we've given them the name. The first one I think I did was Saint Jerome, which is my dad's middle name. Mine too, but it's mostly attributed to him, right? And it was a cheese that a chef from Louisville asked me to make. He asked me to make him something stinky French style cheese. And I said, all right, I can do that. But we made this cheese called St. Paulin, which was kind of a cousin to Limburger. And what makes it unique is you wash it a few times a week in what they call bee linens, which is a bacteria. And it kind of grows on the rind, gets kind of slimy and red looking, kind of an orangish looking. You'll see Munsters like that or Port Salut. And it really stinks, but for some people it tastes good. And so we made some of this for that chef. He loved it. He had it for a French dinner. And my mom at that time said, I just can't take that smell. Please keep that out of the cheese shop. So we wanted to keep the recipe, but without the stink. And so we started washing the cheese in vinegar, which is kind of an idea I saw another cheesemaker using to keep the rind clean from molding or bacteria growing. And so that's how St. Jerome came about, was taking that St. Paulin recipe and just not developing that rind, or that washed rind is what they call it, that washing to generate the bee linens. We started making a cheese called Kentucky Blue, which is like a blue brie, soft ripened blue. And I tried another recipe and it wasn't working right, so I took some advice from different cheese makers and we end up with Kentucky Blue, which is kind of a hybrid of different people's cheese recipes. And we entered it in a cheese contest at the Brown Hotel in Louisville. I think I made two or three batches, and we entered it, and we got in the top 10 out of 70-some cheeses with that Kentucky Blue. And but I could only make like a half a batch of it because I didn't have enough of the small molds. And so I wanted to be more efficient by making a full batch. So we took the remaining curds in the vat, cooked them to a higher temperature, kind of like a cheddar, and then molded them in big molds. Pierced holes in it like a blue, like you do with blues, and then we aged it longer, and that became Barron County Blue. And then a Barron County Blue wasn't selling very well, and I still wanted to make a full batch of cheese, so I took the remaining curds, cooked them in a different way with warm water to a little higher temperature. We didn't pierce it, we just let the blue grow on the rind, and I read where if you just smear that mold around on the rind, it incorporates flavor into the cheese, and that's Kentucky Rose. That's my mom's. That's a tribute to my mom. And so we have three cheeses coming out of the same curd, same bacteria, same mold and everything, just cooked different temperature and handled differently during aging. And it's amazing the difference in flavor coming out of the same vat of milk. We kind of did the same thing with the brie. Aubrey was Beverly's dad's name. So that's what we named our brie, Aubrey. And same situation. We didn't have enough molds to make a whole batch of the Aubrey, so we cooked the remaining curds, and they're double cream, by the way. And then we cooked it to a little higher temperature, let the white mold grow on it. After about a month, we washed that off and start washing it in beer. And that was a method the Belgian monks have used in cheese making. So we wash it in ale that Dan, that works for me, makes at home. And that gives it a really unique flavor. So that's the Nina. And that's Beverly's mom's nickname. And then we have a cheese named after our dog, Cheddar. What else do we have signature? Norwood is a Gruyere-style cheese. That's one of our newest ones. And a friend of mine was a missionary in France for 5 years. His favorite cheese was Beaufort, which he asked me to try to make. Well, I got to researching, and Beaufort and Gruyere are made real similar. One's just made on the Switzerland side of the Alps, and the other one's made on the French side of the Alps. And so we came up with Norwood. His name's Richard Norwood. And what else do we have? I think that's our signature cheeses. And then some of the others, we just start adding some flavors. Most of our flavors come from Holland through a cheesemaker in Canada. So we have some things that aren't common here, like the garlic paprika and the peppercorn Asiago has ginger in it. And some of the flavors we just, like the sun-dried tomato basil, which is our second best seller. We kind of concocted that recipe, and the horseradish, which I have some here tonight. Our best seller is aged white cheddar, and that's about 25% of our sales is aged white cheddar. So in a week's time, we're making at least two batches of white cheddar, and then the rest of the time, we're alternating about a batch of each other type of cheese a week or a month. Some of them we double up. Any other questions? Yeah.
So is there a lot of communication back and forth within the industry among cheesemakers?
Most cheesemakers that I've approached are real open. We don't network and get involved in some of the association stuff probably like we ought to. I mean, there's American Cheese Society. They have annual meetings, and we haven't been to many of those. But I went to Wisconsin this summer and visited three cheesemakers, and they were all just very friendly and open doors. They're not going to tell me their recipes, but they'll show me their aging rooms, and that's the reason I went, to look at aging rooms. But for the most part, everybody's been pretty open to share information.
How many cheesemakers are there in Spain that are doing what you're doing?
There's the Zimmermans in Casey County, an Amish family, and they've spent a lot of time at our cheese shop, and my mom gave them our recipe. And then there's a new creamery called Cloverdale Creamery up in near Shelbyville, and they've just started marketing some English double Gloucesters and that type of cheese. And there's a big cheese plant in Glasgow, but it's industrial, more bigger industrial size. And then I think there's two or three goat cheese makers now, mostly around Lexington, Nicholasville. So, and I think there's other people talking that, well, Western's going to be making cheese. Rhodes Hester's project manager and a friend of mine, they've got their cheese equipment in and refurbishing the building. And the idea, I think, with what's going to happen at Western, and Rhodes is welcome to say more about it, is more of an incubator for not only to use their own milk on the dairy, but to also be a training place for farmers that might be interested in making cheese and seeing how they like it and whether they can market it and that type of thing.
Well, with that, we'll turn now. This is a little unusual. Usually we go to the door prize, but people are here for the cheese, so I think we'll do the door. We'll do the door prize first, and then the Maddings have brought a sampling of cheeses, and we'll give you a little taste and maybe some explanation. So,
okay.
But first, let's. We have a giveaway, and what have we got here?
Cheese.
Yeah, we're going to mix them up. I always get accused of pulling from the top, so I'm going to let Kenny pick one.
Okay.
And so.
Don't have my glasses on.
And it's Camille Graham, right here. And now, Peggy, a little gift from us to the Mattingly.
This was a fun evening, and it will continue to be a fun evening. We thought, since Western Major Film, your son is going to Western, that you need a book about Westerns. So that's in the packet. Okay. And in addition, we have your DVD, and we have your original. And then there's a surprise in there that you have to look at all by yourself.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
This has been great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Over here, okay.
You'll enjoy it.
Well, we invite you to come sample the cheeses on some side and be our guest. And if you have some questions, I'm sure the Mattinglys would be happy to explain.